This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. There are some 40,000 vacant properties in Philadelphia, which are not just eyesores that hurt property values. They can become drug havens, increase crime rates, and reduce quality of life for people living in the neighborhood. Philadelphia is a city of neighborhoods filled with row houses, so it matters what happens on your block. All this week, we're talking with people we are calling movers, shakers, and dreamers working to make Philadelphia a better place. Today is the first of our five-part series. We're going to be talking about some of the new and innovative approaches to land use planning and development. And we have three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studios, and let me introduce them to you. Bobby Heenan was elected to Philadelphia City Council in 2011, representing the Northeast neighborhoods. He's a union electrician, former political director with IBEW Local 98. He launched the Bad Neighbor Initiative last spring, and he created the Problem Properties Advisory Council just recently. And Bobby Heenan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Jamie Moffat. He's a documentary filmmaker, a Kensington housing activist, founded Kensington Renewal. That's an effort to transform vacant properties in owner-occupied homes. He also co-founded a nonprofit organization called The Simple Way, and he has a design company called Jamie Moffat Media Design and Production in a reclaimed row house. He's got some award-winning films, including The Ordinary Radicals and Return to El Salvador. And Jamie Moffat, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And rounding out our trio of guests is Carlton Williams, recently appointed head of LNI, that's Licenses and Inspections, and he was a deputy commissioner in the Streets Department, recently won the city's Richardson Dilworth Award for Distinguished Public Service, and has worked for the city for 13 years. And Carlton Williams, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And nice to have you with us. Let me begin with you, if I could, Bobby Heenan, and I'm interested in this Bad Neighbor Initiative. Where did this come from?
Well, first, again, I want to thank you for having us on the show. Thank you for having me. My office enthusiastically has you on the radio every day.
So, you go. You've said all the right things.
It's true. First, I grew up here in the Northeast. I'm raising my children here. Grew up in a district my entire life. And I seen a slow decline of our neighborhoods. And running for office, it was overwhelmingly brought to my attention, hey, Bobby, we need to do something about property maintenance issues, about bad neighbors, about the quality of life issues that affect our life.
Sure.
Everybody wants a safe and healthy neighborhood to live in. So we come up with the idea of the Bad Neighbor Initiative as we started collecting data. When I first took office, I asked my office to gather data from the multiple departments, because we live in a silo system, which I think the city is getting away from. But the data from the multiple departments tell a story.
Right.
Tell a story in the quality of life of
about
our neighbor,
bad neighbors.
About bad neighbors, about property maintenance violations, about housing inspection license or their lack of, about tax delinquencies, and showing a correlation with the three of those combinations to a decline in property values.
And would you say it's a naming and shaming initiative that you have started?
Well, it's certainly a different approach. It's unfortunately that we have to shame people, to be responsible, to act as a good neighbor and participant in their community. But yes, yeah, it does. When all other measures fail, I will publicly bring somebody's name or an address out to the public.
And yeah, I know you've brought people before city council to address some of the concerns that you've heard from neighbors.
Exactly right. It was one of my first pieces of legislation to have a joint public hearing with the license inspection, Committee on License Inspection and Public Safety, because there is a direct tie between them both in the quality of life, and authorizing them to subpoena whomever I seem necessary when it comes to problem properties.
And I want to get back to you. Let me go to you, Jamie Moffat. Tell us about Kensington Renewal. What was the genesis for that?
Yeah, sure. So some friends and I, back in 1998, we came across some homeless moms and their families that had taken over couple years before, an abandoned Catholic church on 8th and York, and that was Sherry Honkola and the Kenton and Welfare Rights Union.
Sure.
So through that, at my alma mater, Eastern University, we formed a group on campus and really kind of fell in love with the families. We decided January 9th, we had just had our 15-year anniversary. My friend Shane and there were six of us that we bought a house on my credit card. And
what did you pay for that house?
It was, I think it was $40,000. It was $4,000 down and $500 a month, so we used one of those credit card checks to buy it and move in. But we were all, I was a senior in college at the time, and we all moved in to do a lot of community development and homeless advocacy. I moved out in 2003 to work in motion picture full time, then came back and bought an old barber shop in 2007, took it apart and put it back together right across the street from the original house. Mm. And what I found out there is sort of as a property owner was that I really noticed that there wasn't a large number of owner occupants in the area. And there were lots of folks like a guy named Bob Coyle, whose nickname was the Slumlord Millionaire. He had one of his 400 properties was actually behind my studio. So I started asking these kind of questions like, how can this kind of activity be allowed in a neighborhood like Kensington, which statistically it was the poorest section of the poorest neighborhood in the entire city.
And we're talking about what, just a dilapidated house, trash?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we call them abandominiums.
Abandominiums, right, exactly. I was trying to get you to say that word. Yes.
Yeah, so what we ended up doing was kind of taking a look and working a lot with Maura Kennedy from LNI. She's been fantastic. And what we ended up doing was we had our first sort of test project this time, and the idea being home ownership correlates to crime. So we took an abandoned house, rehabbed it this past year, and we have our first family moving in next week, actually. And we're aiming towards doing 10 houses now within this little 1 to 2 square block area that we can really, really kind of effectively show in data that home ownership correlates to crime, and that if we can essentially develop this model, we can then share it with other neighborhoods, not only in Philadelphia but in other cities as well.
Well, I know you're not using your credit card to buy all these houses. How are you getting money? Then we'll turn to you, Carlton Williams.
Yeah, sure. Well, we started using crowdfunding, so that was really, really successful. And then through the publicity of that, we managed to get some partners like Finanta and the Impact Loan Fund, and they've managed to help us out. And now some other folks are starting to reach out as well.
I know what crowdfunding is, but I want to make sure our listeners do. What do you mean by that?
Oh yeah, sure. We started a campaign where we were inviting folks to donate anywhere from $1 on up to help us with closing costs and that sort of stuff. So we managed to cover the closing costs to get us to get us in the door, and then it was a lot of sweat equity and volunteer work.
How much did you raise for this?
We raised, I think, about $2,000, which got us in the door, and then we were able to go and get the appropriate loans and finish it up.
Well, let me turn to you, Carlton Williams, and you have a very different kind of job from our other two guests. But what do you see as the role of LNI to deal with some of the issues that we've been talking about?
Well, we're the lead code enforcement agency to ensure that property owners follow the rules and regulations to maintain their properties, as the councilman stated, and we work very closely. I want to acknowledge working very closely with Councilman Heenan on this initiative to try to address not only blighted properties in the Northeast, but also throughout the city of Philadelphia. It's a major problem, and our department is responsible for ensuring that property owners are held accountable to follow the rules and regulations as established by the property maintenance code.
And how do you do that?
And
how do you get people to comply?
Through enforcement of our codes, and we use the court system. We have a strategy that we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show called the vacant property strategy that addresses landlords, property owners who just neglect their properties and leave the balance and the funds on the city of Philadelphia. You mentioned earlier today it was 40,000 vacant properties in the city of Philadelphia. That estimates cost us about $20 million a year to maintain, and then $2 million in lost revenue. So we do have a challenge and a problem, but I think you have a great panel to demonstrate how effectively we can get things done through city council and through community-based organizations. And with our department, we can make an effective change.
But what I also see from doing a little homework in preparation for the show is maps and apps. I mean, a lot of use of maps of the digital universe to get information and also call people out. Go ahead, Bobby Heenan.
That is absolutely the case. As a matter of fact, I have hired somebody in my office who is an expert in GIS and mapping and data sorting. So it was, you know, with his effort and direction from my office to actually show the correlation between multiple violations, habitual violations, and the decline of property values in a neighborhood. along with 911 calls. Right. So, you have a great panel here to show why we all need to be partners, and I believe L&I and community groups are a perfect fit.
Well, and can I go back to you, Carlton Williams, because both of our other guests, or certainly Jamie Moffitt, talked about a connection between, abandoned vacant properties and crime. Can you make that correlation in very concrete terms for us?
Absolutely. Well, when you have a vacant property, it leaves the opportunity for people to go in and either sell drugs or this opportunity for, unfortunately, people to be vagrants and come inside the property to tear it down. If you're living next to that property, you can't get homeowner's insurance, and it takes down the property value in your home. So those are some of the common factors that's related to vacant properties. At its very core, it starts the blight of a community and a neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when you have an abandoned property on your block, it's hard to either sell your property if you're a landlord or a good landlord. It's hard to rent your property. These are the things that kind of tear down the quality of life here in the city of Philadelphia. So at its very core, we need to stop it before multiple blighted properties become. It starts with one, and then you have multiple ones on the block, and ultimately you lose a neighborhood. So at its very core, we need to stop it before it becomes a major issue.
And Jamie, it's kind of a domino effect. I guess you can have a street with a couple of abandoned houses, and then next thing you know, you've got other problems.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Dr. Joel Kaplan from Rutgers University in New Brunswick, he did a study in our area last year, and his study showed that the closer you are to a vacant property, the more likely you are to be a victim of a violent crime. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, in January of 2010, I was in Iraq working on a movie, and I was statistically safer in Iraq in the war than I was on my own block in Kensington.
And by statistically, you mean just if you
I was less likely to get murdered. We had one handgun-related death within 500 feet of my studio almost every month for about 6 months during that time. Yeah, I was less likely to get shot in the war than I was on my own block at that time. It was, I mean, you can imagine, it's terrifying.
Do you see it that way, Bobby Heenan? That I mean, this sort of direct correlation between these abandoned properties and the crime rate?
Without a doubt, and I believe, not that I believe, the data speaks for itself. Right. If you take the L&I data and you take the police data that they have, there is absolutely a correlation between a quality of life, and not only just a quality of life, as just mentioned, your safety, the safety of your life, is definitely in the numbers that we have. And that's why I'm proud to be working with L&I in the city and the community groups to show creative and innovative ways on how to a different way to approach and develop a framework moving forward to address these issues, to minimize or lessen the degree of major crimes, of misdemeanors, and blighted properties and vacant properties in your neighborhood.
Well, tell you what, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. A quick reintroduction. This is the first of a five-part series this week on Radio Times. In the 11 o'clock hour, a series of interviews we're calling Philadelphia Innovators, and I think our three guests fit that qualification, or certainly that description. Bobby Heenan, elected to Philadelphia City Council in 2011. He's been talking about his Bad Neighbor Initiative. Also with us, Jamie Moffitt is a documentary filmmaker, a Kensington housing activist, founded Kensington Renewal, and Carlton Williams, he is the director, commissioner of Philadelphia's Licenses and Inspections Department, known as L&I. And he's been talking about some programs that his department has been doing. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
The Philadelphia Speaker Series supports WHYY, presented by Widener University, continuing its sold-out season at the Kimmel Center on January 21st, with one of our nation's foremost experts on 21st century warfare, P.W. Singer, sponsored by BNY Mellon Wealth Management.
During WHYY's last on-air campaign, members helped to buy back a half day from the drive. Wouldn't it be great to buy back a full day or more? For every 750 donations received by January 30th, we'll start the drive one day later. That's fewer pledge breaks and more news and information. Make your donation to support the WHYY buyback at whyy.org/support.
Amy Mann's music may cause you to shed a tear, but her life is filled with funny people.
Don't underestimate how insane comedians are. I mean, talk about dark and broken people. We vibe together very well on a lot of different levels.
That's singer, songwriter, and sometimes comedian Amy Mann joining us this week on Sound Opinions.
When you're a charmer, the apples fall.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, the Lincoln Motor Company, featuring a panoramic retractable roof on the 2013 Lincoln MKZ that opens up to over 15 square feet of skylight. More at Lincoln.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Artie Moscow, and this week we're taking a look at some of the good things that are happening in Philadelphia, talking to people we have described as movers, shakers, and dreamers behind some of these innovations. And we're leading off this series talking with three people approaching land use, quality of life, and planning in novel ways. And they are our guests today on Radio Times, Carlton Williams, Jamie Moffat, and Bobby Heenan. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Bobby, I want to go back to you. I want to have you name names because I know you have done this based on research and also based on people that you have hauled before city council. Why do landlords let their properties go into such disrepair?
Well, I think it was a systemic problem with they feel like they can get away with it, and it just continued. There was no enforcement up until recent times, you know, with the prioritize and refocus enforcement from L&I. So they just took advantage of any person they possibly can and disregarded the neighbors.
And gamed the system, you think?
And they absolutely gained the system. They go on payments, they go off payments, they go on payments, they're tax delinquent. All right. Now, some of the successes so far, I've named 14 landlords called to the public at a public hearing. Not all of them showed up, of course.
How many did?
Total between two hearings, six landlords had showed up, two we couldn't have service on, and the rest are just willfully just continuing. Wow. And each one of those landlords that have not showed up, some of them have in excess of 300 properties. One of the landlords had over 300 properties and did not have a property manager. So some of the successes that I've had so far that we have, in coordination with our city agencies is holding people accountable, and some of them have sold their homes. They've hired property managers. They developed relationships with myself in the office in dealing with some of these issues. Mm-hmm. They got into payment plans. I was able to help coordinate with the city and the proper Department of Revenue to get them on payment plans, getting back on the tax rolls. So we're getting responses. Mm-hmm. So for those who do not in their traditional way, I'll go back to public shaming.
I'll go back. So those that did not show up, what's your plan B to go after them? And then I'm going to get some more conversation from our other guests. But
well,
go ahead, Bobby.
That's where we come up with the creative and innovative solutions. And
that's why you're here, right?
To addressing some of these problems. I can tell you one thing. We had a vacant property, 68 acres in the lower end of the district of Port Richmond and Bridesburg. We could not contact the owner to no response, so we tweeted in three different states. And they came down from Boston. They came to my office, and they're coming forward in the spring with a plan to have responsible development in partnership with the community.
So this new social media is a way of finding these people. Do you want to add to that, Jamie?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we spend quite a bunch of time on Facebook and Twitter just kind of telling folks what's going on and taking pictures and telling stories. And one of the things from my perspective as a filmmaker is that I guess the light bulb that turned on for me was walking down the street and kind of seeing it in a way is sort of like a set, and the block is, I mean, it's your movie set. And what kind of movie do you want? You know, do you want this scary post-apocalyptic nightmare? Do you want a beautiful, quiet, peaceful neighborhood with plants and trees and folks? And like we mentioned during the break, it kind of comes down to the broken window theory, the idea that if you allow these sorts of negative visual elements to occur, it gives someone that doesn't want to do the right kind of thing in your neighborhood, it gives them a visual cue that maybe that kind of activity is okay there. So if you remove those visual cues, if you dress the set appropriately, then it's less likely that kind of activity is going to happen in your neighborhood.
That's a great visual representation of what you're trying to do. Let me turn to you, Carlton Williams, about the use of social media. I mean, do you see that as an effective tool?
Absolutely. We recently this year, we just launched our new website at www.phila.gov/LNI. Primarily, it's the first website that gives information from directly from our systems in real time. Right. I mean, people can go on and see what's going on in their community, in their neighborhood, and be able to do actual research without having to call in and find out and wait and get someone out to check for them. They can do it themselves. Mm-hmm. And why this is important is because, again, we don't have an unlimited amount of resources where we can be out there each and every day in every block and every neighborhood. This is why we depend on guys like Jamie and the community and the great people that work with Councilman Heena's office, is that they report these issues to us, and then we can have targeted enforcement as opposed to having us go out and seek and find. This saves time, energy, money, makes us works more efficient. And it gives us an opportunity to see what's going on in the neighborhood, and it keeps the community connected. That is extremely important for our department, because we need great citizens to come up and step up and report these incidents.
Reading you have 63 inspectors.
Correct. That's 63 property maintenance inspectors. That's
okay, great. And you have about 500,000 properties that you have to keep
Absolutely.
Your eye on.
Yeah, so you can see the magnitude.
Yeah, exactly.
And
go ahead.
I'm actually taking classes tomorrow to be a 311 liaison.
Oh, so you are.
I'll be submitting some information.
Very good.
Well, let me go back to you, Carlton Williams. Mm-hmm. Actually, to all three of you, because this is a show about good things going on in Philadelphia, and I think there is a feeling, rightly or wrongly, that you can't do things in this city. It takes too much. There's too much bureaucracy. You've got agencies that don't respond. I mean, is this a new day in Philadelphia, Carlton?
Well, we certainly want to be responsive. Yeah, I think Mayor Nutter and his administration prides itself on transparency and accessibility, and that's our goal. And we want to make sure that we're out there meeting the public, going to community meetings. We attended community meetings with Councilman Heenan to talk about bad property owners and the initiative that he's working on. I think these are critical processes that we need to have in place, because without community support, we can't get things done. On the other side, I think it's important for the community to understand what our processes are. Many people think that we can go out and take action the same day that they call. Unfortunately, there's a procedure and due process that we have to go through and to get a property owner to comply. And we need people to understand that process does take time, but it's effective if they work with the system and we work with the courts and our law department to get things done.
Does the court play a role, Bobby Heenan?
Absolutely. Proper enforcement with the resources that's necessary to deal with the issues. I believe now that Elle and I and the law department and the revenue department are more than willing to push things to the court to have quicker response, and the court has been responsive. We have a the vacant property court, quality of life court that's taking place within our court system now. It's my hope that they expand it. I believe they expanded another day to deal with moving things to sheriff's sale much quicker to shorten the process, so we don't have to deal with vacant or abandoned properties in our neighborhoods. So, I'm excited in the direction that we're working with. LNI certainly has been a great partner, and we now have a framework using the tools and the open data that's available to us through our city and certain department websites, coupled with social media. I think we're absolutely moving in the right direction.
And does shaming and naming work? And by that, I mean, for those landlords that came before you, were they contrite? Did they have an explanation for why their properties were in such disrepair?
Well, not one of the landlords, property owners that came in front of me could say that all of the quality life issues or the property maintenance violations, habitual violations that they continue to have, all right, not one could say that it didn't contribute to the deterioration of our neighborhoods and quality of life. All right, they're clean. Some of them have cleaned up their properties as a result of it. Some of them have not only cleaned it up, but renovated. And some are selling because they don't want to deal with the public perception of who they. Nobody wants to be shamed. It's very embarrassing.
Sure.
So,
especially for your business person,
and it works. Especially if you have people who just want to live in a neighborhood, coach their kids in soccer, football, and walk you know, walk out of their house and not worry if it's going to be dirty or if it's going to be safe. They want to go out, they want to go to the store, and they want to stay and live here in the city of Philadelphia.
Go ahead, James.
Yeah, and my broken record on that is home ownership correlates to crime. I mean, we really need to get more homeowners in these sorts of neighborhoods and convince the banks that we're a good investment, that you can provide a mortgage for a family where our median rent in our neighborhood is between $600 and $700 a month.
That's a lot of rent.
For a two-bedroom, one-bathroom house. Right. That mortgage would be about $350. That's taxes and insurance included. So, I mean, talk about a quality of life change where you can actually provide hundreds of dollars a month back to a family's pocket that can go towards food or clothing, that sort of thing. And you're turning a long-term renter into a homeowner. The idea that as neighborhoods gentrify and as that sort of stuff change, you know, the line goes as the tide rises, all boats rise together. We want to get more of our families in those boats so that we can have more homeowners to join us for the town watch and that sort of thing.
And what did that house sell for, the one that you just rehabbed?
$84,500.
Okay. Yep. And describe your neighborhood, and that was a thumbs up from Bobby Heenan.
Yeah.
Describe your neighborhood for us in Kensington.
Well, it's been pretty darn difficult. We were the reporter Steve Volk did a top 10 drug corners in 2011, and we were number five. Our little area was number five in 2011, and we really kind of took that as a challenge where we wanted to figure out what the best innovations, the best tweaks or hacks that we could kind of come up with. One of the things that made a lot of sense was we actually took the Al Capone method of Al Capone went to jail not for being a mobster, but for tax evasion and mail fraud. And our thought was, well, how can we get these guys and gals that are doing this stuff in our neighborhood, how can we kind of convince them that this isn't the right place to do that? So I found a no loitering ticket in there that's $300. So we put no loitering signs all up all over the place, and you get one warning, and then after that it's a $300 ticket. And after a number of weeks, folks kind of went away because it was really expensive to deal drugs in our neighborhood, and we're a much quieter, more peaceful neighborhood than we had been in the past. So it's just those sort of like things. And even Captain Vogt of the 24th District started handing out those no loitering signs to businesses under the L as like, here's a way that we can actually help you move this negative activity along. It's just kind of a fun little thing. And it was already on the books. You know, we didn't have to reinvent the wheel.
Does it make sense to you, Carlton? We'll get to our callers.
Absolutely. One of the things that we want to bring in more people like Jamie. And his residents. That's our goal.
To clone this guy somehow.
That's our goal. That's right. That's our goal. And I think the councilman can agree with me on that, is that we get more people like Jamie. I think you'll see the conditions and things will change in neighborhoods where we have blighted buildings. One of the things that our department has been working on for the past year especially is our vacant strategy. And the strategy attempts to hold property owners accountable through things that we talked about a bit earlier, is through targeted enforcement, using the court system, using our law department to bring property owners who just neglect and won't do anything with their abandoned properties into compliance, either through repair or through sell the property. And so our department has been working aggressively to target low vacancy and high vacancy areas where you have abandoned properties and just been centers for neglect for so many years. We've brought in over 600 properties into compliance as a result of this program, bringing in money for new permits, new fees, and new revenues for the city of Philadelphia, and doing the things that we hope to accomplish by eliminating blight in our communities and our neighborhoods.
And that's Carlton Williams. He's the head of L&I here in Philadelphia, spearheading, as he just described, something called the Vacant Land Strategy. Filmmaker Jamie Moffitt is with us as well, using crowdfunding to rehab blighted properties, part of his Kensington Renewal Initiative. Also with us is Philadelphia City Councilman Bobby Heenan. He has a Bad Neighbor Initiative. It's getting some good reviews. He's been describing that to us as well. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let's see what Sarah from an area has to say. Sarah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I am trying to start a community garden right now, and what I have run across is that though there are 40,000 vacant lots, it's actually really difficult to get to acquire land. So I was wondering if anyone had any suggestions for how to go about that process.
And you have a piece of land that you're looking at, Sarah?
No, we would like to do it in North Philadelphia, South Philadelphia, But pretty much what we do is dependent on where we end up. So sure. We're just trying to figure out how to do it now.
Well, let me toss that to you first, Carlton Williams. Go ahead.
Sure. I think your first step, Sarah, thank you first of all for taking the initiative to want to improve our city. I think the first step is to check to see who owns the property, whether it's currently owned by the city of Philadelphia, it's under the Redevelopment Authority, or if it's under private property. If it's still under private property, you cannot build on it without property's consent ownership or until it's transferred over or sold to you. So you have to go through that type of procedure and do your research before you actually identify that property. I think the Redevelopment Authority would be a great place for you to start because they have a listing of all properties that they are for sale for the city of Philadelphia. But again, if it's private property owned, you cannot build on that property. And we have to take measures in order for us to go out and identify who that property owner is before someone can actually take the initiative that Sarah's going to do.
And just to underscore that, about 25% of the properties, I guess vacant properties, are owned by the city and the rest are privately owned.
That's correct.
What do you think, Jamie?
I've had a lot of success looking at the Office of Property Assessments website where you can go and type the address in and find out who the owner is, what the back taxes are, that sort of thing. And then I've been working with our city councilwoman, Maria Quinones Sanchez, and also Councilwoman Sanchez and State Rep John Taylor worked a lot on
Republican and Democrat, right?
Yeah. It's been amazing, and they've been working on the land bank initiative. So for folks like me, it's really a lot more kind of like one-stop shopping. Like here's this nasty space that we need to figure out what to do with. Instead of spending months to figure out who the heck owns the darn thing, we can go and say, here we go. We've got this kind of funds. Can we go and do this sort of thing? That's been really helpful in making it so that we can at least kind of develop a 5-year game plan as we get bigger, we can see where these pieces go and then how we can work on them.
Is this a new day in Philadelphia, Bobby Heenan?
It is absolutely a new day in Philadelphia. And as Jason had said, the Office of OPA and the BRT, they're, open data records. Property assessment.
Gotcha.
I apologize.
That's okay.
I would absolutely, Sarah, recommend, calling or first visiting the websites there and, trying to find out who is the property owner. And if it is the city of Philadelphia, and we own, as you indicated, 25% of the properties in the city, certainly head to Philadelphia Redevelopment Authority. And there's a process right now that's on the front end where you could put in for an inquiry that you're interested in a property and then contact your local district council person who will certainly be supportive, as you try to, do something really positive in the neighborhood.
We're almost up in a break here, about a minute or so, but would it be fair to say, Bobby Heenan, that the vacant property has been a problem in this city, but now there are some possibilities? I mean, there's another way of looking at vacant land, not just as a problem.
Absolutely. That there is a solution and a framework because we have folks and partners like Jason in the communities who have produced results. So, having the community involved and engaged and taking responsibility of cleaning up a property and putting it to good, responsible use that conforms with the neighborhood to try to make everybody's quality of life across the city greater. You have city government and agencies and departments like Department of L&I and others who are absolutely willing, all right, to come forward and be helpful.
Well, let's take that short break. We'll get back to our conversation with Bobby Heenan, the voice you just heard. He's a Philadelphia City Councilman, and we've been talking about his Bad Neighbor Initiative. Also with us, filmmaker Jamie Moffitt, and he's been talking about Kensington Renewal, and Carlton Williams, the head of L&I, talking about a number of strategies in his department, including the vacant land strategy. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY from playwright Katori Hall, The Mountaintop, the Broadway play that shines a light into the private heart of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in contrast to the traditional portrait of the iconic leader. After delivering his landmark Mountaintop speech in Memphis, an exhausted Dr. King retires to room 306 at the Lorraine Motel, where he encounters a mysterious stranger as an epic storm rages outside. Both inspirational and intimate, The Mountaintop, January 18th through February 17th at the Suzanne Roberts Theater. Tickets at PhiladelphiaTheaterCompany.org.
On the next Fresh Air, Gene Robinson reflects on his time as the first openly gay bishop in the Episcopal Church. He's just retired. For years, Robinson received death threats. One suspect was arrested with photos of Robinson.
He had scrawled across them, "Save the church, kill the bishop," and he had a sawed-off shotgun and tons of ammunition.
Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Most of us think we know what's going to happen tomorrow, but life is full of random moments, good things and bad, that seem to come out of nowhere, and how we handle them is important to our well-being and personal narrative. I'm Dan Gottlieb, and on the next Voices in the Family, how life comes at us out of nowhere and how we handle it. Today at noon, here on WHYY-FM.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. It's also the first of our five-part series on Radio Times, something we're called Philadelphia Innovators, and we're talking about some of the new and innovative approaches to things like land use and planning and development and quality of life in the city of Philadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let's see what Michael from Wyomissing has to say. And go ahead, you're on Radio Times. Hi, Michael.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm an owner of a house in Wishanoming, and I have a house next to me that's in a real dilapidated shape. And I've been trying to work with the owner to try and have her do something with it. She won't sell it. She won't rent it. And no one lives in it for over 7 or 8 years, and it's the only house on our block. It's just horrible, and I don't know what to do to put more pressure on her to actually do something about it.
Well, Michael, I'm going to start with Carlton Williams, and Bobby Heenan's going to weigh on this, but what can he do?
Sure. Michael, first of all, make sure that you get it reported to us. You can use 311 system and put it in to make the complaint. Therefore, we can definitely follow up and send an inspector out to the location to see what the issue is, whether it's exterior maintenance problem or a property maintenance issue. What the procedure is that we'll issue, if a violation is found after our inspection, we'll issue a violation and contact the property owner to get her to comply, and we'll start the process from there.
And what about for you, Bobby Heenan? This is in your district.
Absolutely. It is in my district. And what I would recommend, absolutely, one is to make the call and have it on the record at 311. And then I would call my office. If you call my office, we could do some following up. The letters and personal contact that, you know, has led to a lot of success in some of the folks who were not in compliance with any property maintenance violations. So I would recommend doing that as well, and we'll be glad to help you out.
But do you think for some people it's just they don't have the money, the wherewithal to deal with a problem property?
Absolutely. In some cases, we take some of the problem properties, at least by complaints, and individually take a look at them separately to see, you know, what could be the issues. The city has social services. There are some nonprofits out there in different organizations with CLS and TURN and some of the nonprofit groups that will be able to help. If somebody has fallen on bad times, we certainly understand that. And, you know, not only my office, but the city is certainly here to and willing to help.
And CLS, Community Legal Services.
Yes.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah. I've often, when I've called 311, the important thing that I learned was to keep the confirmation number that you get. You can call back or check online within 30 days, and they're required to act. So if nothing's happened, then you can call back again and say, listen, guys, you know, we did our part. It's time for you to do yours.
What are your plans? I know Philadelphia renewal or Kensington renewal. Mm-hmm. So you have one property that you rehabbed.
Yep. We did one well.
You did one well.
Yeah.
Have you identified your second property or third or fourth or fifth?
Yeah. Actually, we're working with a great guy who's kind of come in. He grew up in Frankfurt, and now he's interested in kind of paying it forward a little bit. And so we're going to start looking at 10 houses in the area. And we're actually it's great too because he works in motion picture. So we're actually talking about the idea of doing sort of a reality show, kind of extreme home makeover. But the issue that I have with that show is that you can, like the folks in Camden that got a house, is that within months they had to put their house up for sale because they couldn't afford the property taxes or the heating, you know. So instead, for us, I mean, we want to create sort of an extreme home makeover for 2013, where these are sustainable homes that folks can definitely afford to. We want to generationally shift the outcome of a family's life.
And are they all sort of within the same block or same several blocks?
I mean, our goal is within three or four blocks of our sort of target area, which is the space that there was a fire back in 2007 that burned down a big chunk of our neighborhood, and Barbara Laker did a big story on it. And that idea now is that on ancient Westmorelands that we want to actually turn that into a park, and the neighbors have called it the Phoenix, like rising from the ashes, Phoenix Community Park and Garden. So our goal is to get that into Parks and Rec inventory, hopefully within the next year or so. And for us, that's really kind of like a bonus game piece in the middle of our board. You know, the Pennsylvania Horticultural Society says that those kind of spaces increase property value between 4% and 8%. So for us as redevelopers, it makes it easier for us to court a different kind of investor. We don't want someone to go the Bob Coyles of the world to buy a house for $5,000, minimally rehab it, and rent it into the ground and leave it abandoned. You know, we want folks that'll come in and say, I can turn this into an owner-occupied home. And that, for us, will increase property values and increase, you know, comparables on appraisals and that sort of thing. It makes it easier for us to go and to get the bigger picture for what we're looking for our neighborhood.
But should the goal be, Carlton, home ownership for everyone in Philadelphia?
Well,
or more people than are homeowners now?
Well, if you're a property owner and you decide to rent, we want to make sure that you're accountable and that you keep your property in good condition. So we're not opposing landlords. Of course, we would like home ownership and a good combination of both. Not everyone wants to buy a property or can afford one. So we know we need a considerable amount of rental properties available. I think the key point here is that whether you decide to own or rent out your property, that you have to maintain the quality of life in those neighborhoods in which your property exists. And I think that's what the councilman is fighting for. That's what our department continues to fight for. And I think that's what Jamie represents, is that we need to make sure that people, whether you decide to own, rent, or what have you, just to make sure that you understand what value that your property plays here in the city of Philadelphia in the big scheme of things.
But why are there 40,000 abandoned properties, vacant properties in the city?
Could be a number of reasons. You know, the economy could have an effect on it. People move out, unfortunately. We have people who pass away and that leave properties. And so there's a number of reasons why properties become vacant. I think the most important thing is that someone can do is to try to reach out before they get into dire consequences. I know that you talked about earlier, our department is not really trying to, you know, target to take people properties. We want to help you in the beginning, but you can't let your property dilapidate to a point where it's too late to get help, and then that we're taking other enforcement actions. You need to take the initial step to try to seek out help. Go to your council person, call the city of Philadelphia, go to 311, find out what services are available so that you can address whatever property issues that you're having in advance before it become major issues.
I heard the words a land bank earlier in the hour. Bobby Heenan, is this a sensible thing to do moving forward, the idea of creating a land bank?
Absolutely it is. On concept, the land bank has been a long day coming.
Yes,
I know Representative Taylor has been working on this for over a decade and finally seeing it come to fruition. And I have a nice relationship with him and felt his pain for many years here. Now you have good partners with the city of Philadelphia and its agencies who, from a concept standpoint and data collection, I believe that the land bank is probably the right thing to do moving forward. You know, it still has a tremendous amount of hurdles in front of it, but I think you have a lot of smart people who are collaboratively working together and hope that we can come to something that is, you know, that works for everybody.
Well, and I think tragically some of these big fires, and I'm thinking of some of the fires that, Jamie, in Kensington have shed light on the problems of absentee landlords, the problems of what happens in a vacant property if it's not boarded up or it's not taken care of.
Yeah, absolutely. And people
have lost their lives, we should say.
Absolutely, yeah. And the real negative halo effect of those sorts of things where you've got these big negative influences in our neighborhood and there's no one to be held accountable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we just started taking a shovel and, you know, taking some plants and making things just a little bit nicer, then figuring out who the heck owns this thing. And then eventually, hopefully, we can figure out how to make it something that we all want to, you know, to work on together.
Does it make sense, though, Carlton, to work on sort of house by house versus or perhaps large developments? As we know, there's some big developments that have happened in Philadelphia where whole areas have been raised and then new housing built on top of that.
I think you need a combination of both. I think that we're through our vacant strategy, the Doors and Windows program has been very effective at its smallest level. It requires that property owners where there is 80% occupancy on a block or where it's deemed blighted, must have windows and doors as their storefront if they have a vacant property. And what this does is it gives value back to the community. It eliminates the broken windows theory that Jamie had talked about earlier. So no matter if it's a major development or it's a single property, I think that they all need to happen simultaneously, and that strategy needs to continue.
Let me see what it looks like Anthony from South Philadelphia has to say. And Anthony, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah, hi.
Hi there.
I was always wondering, like, there is a large minimum security labor force within the county corrections and state correction system, both who have building trades programs. And these guys could get, like, on-the-job training and help clean up the city at the same time. I was wondering, you know, why that sort of thing has never been tapped.
I think it's an interesting, and I'm looking at my computer screen here, Anthony. It says you were incarcerated and now you do carpentry?
Yeah, I'm a general contractor.
Right.
And, you know, if a good couple groups of guys could be supervised by licensed contractors on a daily basis, the labor would be next to nothing. They would be getting on-the-job training. You know, there's just some logistics to work out, of course.
Sure, sure. Well, I think it's an interesting idea. You do see prisoners cleaning up highways. Bobby Heenan?
Absolutely.
Is he onto something here?
Well, I think, Anthony, thank you for the call. One thing I know from being in the background, having a background and membership in the Philadelphia Building Trades is we're already out in the community. And, you know, when you talk about trying to stop recidivism and, you know, putting people to work, if work is available, you know, we have, as the building trades, right, the building trades has wonderful, wonderful community partnerships with every neighborhood in the city, you know, from PHA, that program. And, you know, when folks who may be coming out and re-entry, I mean, the building place is a nice way to go. They have open enrollments. You know, of course, that's limited to the amount, you know, the supply and demand of the economy at this time. But, you know, I can tell you that myself, I've been a part of neighborhood cleanups, you know, in every park and rec and PHA development in this city over the last 23 years. So I'm very proud of some of the programs that the building trades have and being part of the community. So I would reach out to your prospective craft and see how you can get involved.
Thanks for the call to Radio Times. I mean, Jamie, you work outside the system. You're not an elected official. You're not the head of LNI, as our other two guests. As someone who has to, in a sense, make the city work and get departments to do what they're supposed to do, have you found responsiveness?
Yes. Yeah. A lot of it kind of came down to figuring out what community meetings in our neighborhood or in other neighborhoods that I could kind of go to and kind of find out how the pieces of the puzzle work. I mean, now with organizations like Philly Rising, it makes it a little bit easier for folks that are new to this to sort of understand who does what and who you kind of need to talk to in order to make that happen. But it's been really helpful to kind of understand that, okay, if you want to have this kind of issue resolved, you have to work within this within these particular folks in this kind of way. And before that, so many of my neighbors were just going, this is the city, it's always been like this and it's never going to change. And I don't know, I get kind of ornery when I hear those sorts of things. So I really sort of took it as a challenge, and from my background as a documentary filmmaker, I enjoyed the research and understanding how the system works and how it can work for us the constituents.
Sure, sure. And I know you've heard that before, Carlton Williams, which is, this is the way we do things in Philly, and there's no way around it.
Yeah, Jamie had pointed out a very good point through Philly Rising. One of the key initiatives under Philly Rising is citizen engagement. Understanding how to get things done. Again, working with LNI is a process. And as I stated earlier, once people understand and become educated about its use, how to use the tools for their benefit, then government can be more effective, and we can be more effective in addressing problems within the neighborhoods and communities. My goal this year is to make sure that our guys get out there and meet with people like Jamie and other community groups and organizations to come to community meetings and to explain that process so that they can start working with their inspectors right in the neighborhood, right in the community, pointing out problems and getting results and staying on top of what are the issues in their neighborhood. See, once we give them the kind of empower the neighbors, they become great partners for us to get our job done and then ultimately improve the conditions in their neighborhood.
I mean, there's nothing like information, right, Jamie?
Yeah. And I mean, it's contagious. It's kind of that Gandhi quote, you know, be the change that you wish to see in the world today. Like, get out there and start sweeping your street, and you're going to see other folks watch you and go, what the heck is this crazy guy doing? And eventually they're going to help you sweep the street, and then you're going to form a little town watch. And I mean, that's kind of how it worked. It was just kind of sticking one's neck out to kind of be a little bit different and do what you think is good in the neighborhood. And other folks are going to want to do it too.
Let me put to you, Bob. I know you created this recently, the Problem Properties Advisory Council, Bobby Heenan. Can you explain that, how that works?
Yes, we created... Again, it's just morphed into a more into the weeds, so to speak. But there is a larger systemic problems that we have to deal with. And when the problem property, it's called the Problem Property Advisory Committee. I formed it. There's representatives from every community group that is in my district. It's district specific, so it's a little easier for me to focus in on all the resources that I possibly can on my district. But I believe it's a good model to take citywide, and I intend on doing that moving forward. So, folks, if there's houses that addresses, you know, for folks in the community that are a problem status, whether they're 911 calls, three or more violations in a 1 year period, three neighbors or more have called, three or more calls coming to my office, they meet the requirements to be a problem property. Wow. Then we deal with it responsibly, you know, as a group. It's official. We have minutes. It's open. It's transparent. It's open to the public. And I wish everybody would, you know, participate more and have that kind of civic engagement or civic neighborhood involvement is more or less. So we work collaboratively with the departments, Department of L&I, Streets, CLIP, which is, you know, part of the managing director's office, who works closely, you know, with L&I. So we have, and the district attorney's office. So we know how to address each property on an individual basis so we can address their problem.
On that note, we have to end our discussion. City Councilman Bobby Heenan, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times. And filmmaker Jamie Moffitt, thank you for joining us as well. He has been talking about his Kensington Renewal Initiative. And Carlton Williams, thank you very much as well, the new head of L&I, spearheading a number of projects, including the Vacant Land Strategy. That's the first part of a five-part series this week, looking at and talking with Philadelphia innovators. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about entrepreneurs and tech startups. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times. Also, we welcome Heather Bromfield, our new intern, and Bob Alls, the engineer, for today's edition of the show, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Dennis Devine, and Debbie Builder. I'm Marty Moscow, and thank you so much for joining us.